Back in the late teens and 20s, the brand new Soviet Union saw an incredible artistic flowering. But in 1934, that springtime came to an end. Stalin banned the avant-garde and mandated socialist realism. Paintings had to be figurative and heroic and glorify the Soviets. And up through the 1980s, socialist realism was still the official mode. But some artists quietly pursued their own idiosyncratic styles. They formed little secret groups underground. And then, suddenly, they could come out in the open. Pamela Renner talked to some of these artists about their transformation from subversives to stars.
In the center of artist Grisha Bruskin's living room in Chelsea, New York, there's a monumental pair of his paintings called Logis 1 and 2. The name comes from words like ideologies, mythologies, theologies, and zoologies. It's divided into hundreds of small windows, each one displaying Soviet youth and leader types. The figures hold colorful objects. Lenin's portrait, for example, or a tiny Kremlin. It's an astonishing work, almost scientific in its detail. Just as often, Bruskin adds fragments of Jewish legend and Kabbalah, upside-down angels, Hasidic scholars, demons with the tails of lizards.
I came to the United States when I was maybe 40-something years old. They asked me, you were born in this troubled country in the former Soviet Union. It was ideological terrorism against people, against artists. You were unhappy. No, I'd say I was happy. First of all, I was young. Secondly, I did my own art.
Born in 45, Bruskin inherited the propaganda art of the regime. It was part of his childhood, part of the air he breathed.
It was a religious art, like in ancient Egypt or ancient Assyria. They're creating portraits of leaders, like portraits of saints. It was Lenin as a child. Everybody knew this small Lenin as a child god.
We were artists, and our weapon was irony and visual images.
That's Vitaly Komar. Working as a team with Alex Melamed, he helped introduce conceptual art to the Moscow underground.
Search of spirituality was very important in Russian underground art at this time.
Most of the people, they didn't believe in communist ideology.
Grisha Bruskin.
Everybody was trying to find the positive ideas. Somebody went to Buddhism, somebody to Christianity, somebody to Judaism, somebody, even art was a kind of religion to us.
In the decades after Stalin, underground artists risked imprisonment as a social parasite.
Almost all my shows, all of them, were closed by the official bureaucrats.
But if you were lucky, you'd have a union card and some kind of official work, like children's book illustration, and the will to create art on your own. A handful of artists fought for visas and were able to emigrate. Vitaly Komar.
I believe it was third year after immigration. And in 1981, we thought about our childhood more and more.
In New York, Komar and Melamed painted a series they called Nostalgic Socialist Realism. They used opium poppy reds and rich walnuts to suggest the imposing rooms where party leaders gathered. In 1982, they painted Stalin peering out of the rear window of a limousine. They called it, I saw Stalin once when I was a child.
It's really happened on the Moscow street. I saw him. Maybe it was his double, I don't know.
Meanwhile, artists back in Russia began to feel the tremors of 1980s glasnost.
So what happened when the Soviet Union failed? There was no enemy no longer. There was no communist state.
Alexander Gertzman curated the exhibition Remembrance, Russian Postmodern Nostalgia, at the Yeshiva University Museum in New York.
It was a free country, or country developing freedom. Artists didn't know what to do. They were lost. They just came to the dead end, to the wall.
In 1988, with the Soviet Union in its twilight, the government allowed the auction house Sotheby's to come to Moscow and put a century of Russian art on the block. They invited underground artists to participate, people who hadn't been able to exhibit for years.
This event really showed everybody that Russian art exists and different than everybody thought, and it's open to the Western perception. It was surrealism, it was impressionism, it was futurism, conceptual art, naive art, really very, very different style.
And Grisha Bruskin's life was never the same.
It was a kind of Cinderella story. Before the auction, they organized a very chic dinner, and they invited us, artists, and we came in the blue jeans, in the t-shirts, and we saw the most richest people from the West. And during this evening, I was at the table with a very distinguished lady, and she said, "Grisha, I know auctions very well. I feel that tomorrow your big painting will be sold for $100,000. And I decided that she's crazy.
Actually, it sold for more than $400,000. The government took the profits. But the sheer ambition of the painting earned it a place on the front page of the New York Times as a symbol of perestroika. A week later, Bruskin came to America, and he stayed. It's been 15 years since the Soviet Empire crumbled. Looking at Bruskin's work from the period, it's clear that vanished empires leave behind indelible traces.
The real artifact is the artifact of official art, of the Soviet art. My art is different. There is a key, a code to understand that. And I think the guy from the future will decode my secret and will know a lot about the civilization. And what happened that I am the guy from the future now. I sent the message to myself. That's funny.
For Studio 360, this is Pamela Renner.
Ой, Вань, гляди, какие клоуны. Рот хоть завязочки пришей. Ой, да чего, Вань, размалёваны.
To see work by Grisha Bruskin and Komar Melamed and other Russian artists, go to studio360.org.